welcome back to HealthLink On Air, produced each week by Upstate Medical University and University Hospital. This is your host, Tricia Torrey, every patient's advocate. It's been a year since the last time we heard from this morning's guest, Dr. Robert Carhart, cardiologist and associate professor of medicine at Upstate. Good morning. Welcome back.
Good morning.
You know, you used to be here quite frequently, and now we don't get to see you very often. You're a busy man.
Well, I didn't realize it's been a year.
Yes, it's been a year. You know, Valentine's Day seemed like the perfect time to catch up with you. I hope you agree. So let's catch up. And I know you also have an upcoming session at HealthLink. You're going to be talking about heart health and so forth. We'll talk more about that at the end of our conversation this morning. But, you know, I want to start with some awareness type information, some general heart disease information. And then I want to kind of move into what's on the horizon and what studies are being done and so forth. Does that sound good to you this morning?
Absolutely.
All right, good. So let's start. This is actually Heart Month, I believe. So I want to do kind of Heart Disease 101. I want you to tell me, who is your worst case scenario patient?
Well, actually, there's two worst case scenarios.
Ah.
And we'll start with probably the one that everyone thinks of and what pops into their head, which is the patient that understands the concerns, the risks for heart disease, but just is not motivated to do it in terms of trying to fix themselves.
And what are those kinds of things?
Well, for example, smoking.
Smoking
is a huge risk for heart disease. And it is just amazing to me the number of people that even after a heart attack or a stroke, they continue to smoke. And despite efforts to try to help them, they just won't stop.
They prefer the smoking to giving it up and having a longer life, perhaps.
Well, and that's, and it makes it very difficult because smoking in and of itself increases their risk for a repeat event.
Sure.
You know, if you look at the statistics, for example, if you're a diabetic and you smoke, you're at 10 times greater risk for a heart attack or vascular disease than if you are either.
And actually a whole host of diseases altogether.
Yeah.
So smoking is one problem. Talk about some more.
Well, you know, the one that we always talk about in this country is diet and, you know, being aware of the things that are good for you. And in terms of diet modifications, because of the awareness that's across the country, it's much easier now. You know, it was always classic in this country that people would eat food saturated fat levels that were through the ceiling.
Sure, red meats and those kinds of things.
Absolutely,
butter,
and deep fried everything.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you still see the state fair with the deep fried Twinkies.
Sure.
And, you know, occasionally as a treat, that's okay, but there is an awareness. You know, it's not that people are now surprised when you tell them that's probably not good for you to eat. Yet they continue to do that.
Sure. Sure.
And, you know, it's even just the issue of a little bit of activity. It's been demonstrated time and again that even small amounts of exercise 3 times a week decreases your blood pressure, lowers your cholesterol, lowers your risk overall for vascular disease. But yet again, you know, trying to get people motivated to do that. And, you know, the expectation of these nightmare patients, if you will, is that you'll just fix them.
Oh, sure, because you're the doctor.
Absolutely.
And you must have a pill that if I take that pill, it will fix everything that I'm doing wrong.
Absolutely. And then, unfortunately, the next part of that is you try to do that, you give them the pills, and they just don't take them.
Oh, so that would be a nightmare patient as well.
Well, that
non-compliance, non-adherence, those kinds of words, just patients who you suggest to them what they can do, and then they don't do it anyway.
And, it, you know, many times it's unfortunate because you try and they do become frustrating. I mean, there are roadblocks that are sort of in their way sometimes.
Sure.
But
sure.
A lot of it is just, you know, the patient that just doesn't want to help themselves. I mean, the understanding of heart disease is unfortunately not clear in most people's minds. You have a heart attack, you know, they fix you, you're past the immediate stage, most people believe, in a sense, they're, quote, cured.
Sure.
And it isn't. It's a lifelong disease. It's no different than any other chronic condition and requires long-term monitoring of your own habits as well as long-term care and long-term compliance.
And I want to get into what some of those things are in a minute, but I don't want to lose sight of our nightmare patient here for a moment. Family history. There must be people who realize that someone in their family who's close to them has had a heart attack. Talking to them about prevention before they ever get to the first one, that must be difficult too.
Well, it's difficult because some people don't want to feel that they're predestined. And, you know, I think that that has certainly psychological ramifications. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, well, everyone in my family has had a heart attack before the age of 50. I know that that's what's going to happen to me, so I might as well just enjoy life and eat my, you know, steaks and smoke my cigarettes and, you know, not do any of the thing necessary. And, you know, family history is a strong component of your risk for vascular disease, but how you approach it is variable. And, you know, you can take that approach that it's a foregone conclusion and, you know, I might as well just go with it. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of people that are also very motivated, and understanding that risk and trying to do everything they can to lower the risk is important. The unfortunate part of all of that is we don't have an absolute understanding of all of the genetic predisposers mm-hmm. for vascular disease.
Well, if I understand correctly, you may have a family history of heart disease, which is an indication that you may very well have heart disease, but you can also acquire heart disease without having any family history. And so that's like a major question mark. You just don't know.
Yeah. And that's correct. And, you know, we have, you know, those patients, if you will, that come in that have no risk factors and yet they still have a heart attack.
Sure.
And, you know, those are the cases which makes everyone stop, kind of step back and say, okay, what was
going on?
The piece that we missed here.
Yeah.
And right now, we don't have a full understanding of that.
You mentioned a second nightmare patient. Who's your second nightmare patient?
Well, the second nightmare patient is more sort of the nightmare in a sense of not related to the patient.
Mm-hmm.
It's a nightmare for the patient.
Okay.
And those are patients that do understand their problems, do understand that they need to do something about where they are and can't get to that point. And, you know, it
can't get to that point for what reason?
Many times it's economic.
Aha. Uh-huh.
You know, they can't afford medications. You know, they can't afford going into sort of secondary prevention programs like cardiac rehabilitation that some insurances pay for, many don't. And it's one of those things that the patient is motivated, but the system's not in place to help them.
Are these typically younger patients? I mean, for instance, does Medicare take care of these things, but some insurances or people on Medicaid or certainly people without insurance do not have access to?
Most often, Medicare mm-hmm. is fairly good. I think, again, recognizing the fact that the incidence of heart disease increases as you get older,
sure.
I think Medicare as a system understands that this is something they have to get behind and support. And if they can prevent a second event in a long range, it saves them money.
Sure.
And certainly a lot of times it's the younger patient, the patients that, you know, if they have a cardiac event, may be in danger of losing their job.
Sure.
Can't afford health insurance.
Or even people who are working and they have a very high deductible or something like that. I suppose that would be a problem as well.
Right. And you know, we see these patients where they're making choices.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do I pay the electric bill or do I pay for my medications?
Yeah.
And, you know, that's it's frustrating because we do have an understanding of some of the things that can help prevent
sure.
sort of a recurrent event or certainly even prevent a primary event. You know, and as you mentioned, the family history, you know, there are a lot of people that do know that, you know, they're at risk. But to get to that point of what can I do to prevent it?
Right.
Is something more difficult.
As a cardiologist, do you see very many patients before they ever have the first heart attack, or do you pretty much start to see them when they have the first event? You're calling it an event.
An event.
Right.
Yeah. And it is an event in many
mm-hmm.
ways.
I'm sure.
Most often, as a cardiologist, I'm going to see them after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
I do have patients that are, again, motivated, and they refer themselves, and they say, you know, my family history. Many times it's relatives of patients that are already in the practice.
Sure. So there are really two kinds of prevention. There's prevention of the first one, and then there's prevention of making sure you don't have a second one.
Absolutely.
Are they two different approaches?
They are to some extent. The targets, for example, for your cholesterol are different.
Mm-hmm.
The approach that you would take with somebody in terms of long-term lifestyle modifications when they have not had an event is a little bit different than somebody who already has had a heart attack. Many times they're motivated. People for primary prevention most often don't need medications. It just is...
It's lifestyle.
A changing of a lifestyle.
It's lifestyle. We've only got a few seconds before we take a break. I'm hoping you can stay with us through the news. But I just want to quickly ask, I know that there's a lot of talk now about the differences between men and women and how they suffer heart problems. Are you seeing a lot of the differences now in that recognition? Are people recognizing it better?
I think that the differences have always been there. I think the recognition is now the issue, and more people are aware that there is a difference between men and women.
There is, and the symptoms are different as well.
Absolutely.
Talk to us just briefly about the symptoms, how they might be different.
Men tend to present with the more classic or typical. For example, if we just take heart attacks, men tend to present with the more classic central chest pain radiating.
The ones we see
arm.
On TV.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Whereas women tend to have more vague symptoms. It may be just shortness of breath. It may be a sudden onset of fatigue, something that you can't necessarily put together with, I'm having a heart attack.
They're not standing there and collapsing, and it's very dramatic. Okay, we do need to take a break. Can you stay with us?
Absolutely.
That would be great. And listeners, we will be back in just a few moments. This is Upstate's HealthLink on air on 570 WSYR.